Welcome to the 20th century and reality. My name is Hades.
Acheron extended a hand. The man bowed and shook it gratefully, mistakenly believing he had fallen among friends.
Your servant, Mr. Hades.
My name is Mr. Quaverley, resident of Mrs. Todgers, and a proctor by trade. I have to confess that I have no small notion of the large wonder that has been subjected to me, but pray tell me, since I see you are the master of this paradox, what has happened and how I can be of assistance.
Acheron smiled and patted Mr. Quaverley's shoulder affectionately.
My dear Mr. Quaverley, I could spend many happy hours in discussion with you about the essence of Dickensian narrative, but it would really be a waste of my precious time.
Felix Seven, return to Swindon and leave Mr. Quaverley's body where it will be found in the morning. Felix Seven took Mr. Quaverley firmly by the arm.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and Felix Seven?
Yes, sir.
While you're out, why don't you quieten down that Sturmey Archer fellow? He's of no earthly use to us any more.
Felix Seven dragged Mr. Quaverley out of the door. Mycroft was weeping.
Chapter 16. Sturmey Archer and Felix Seven.
The finest criminal mind requires the finest accomplices to accompany him. Otherwise, what's the point? I always found that I could never apply my most deranged plans without someone to share and appreciate them. I'm like that. Very generous.
Acheron Hades, degeneracy for pleasure and profit.
So, who's this guy we're going to see?
Fellow named Sturmey Archer, replied Bowden as I pulled my car into the curb. We found ourselves opposite a small factory unit that had a gentle glow of light showing through the windows.
A few years ago, Cromarty and myself had the extreme good fortune to arrest several members of a gang which had been attempting to peddle a rather poorly forged sequel to Coleridge's The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. It was entitled Rime 2, The Mariner Returneth, but no one had been fooled. Sturmey avoided jail by turning state's evidence. I've got some dirt on him about a Cardenio scam. I don't want to use it, but I will if I have to.
What makes you think he has anything to do with Cromarty's death?
Nothing, said Bowden simply. He's just next on the list.
We walked across in the gathering dusk. The streetlights were flickering on, and the stars were beginning to appear in the twilight sky. In another half hour it would be night. Bowden thought about knocking, but didn't bother. He opened the door noiselessly, and we crept in.
Sturmey Archer was a feeble-looking character who had spent too many years in institutions to be able to look after himself properly. Without designated bath times, he didn't wash, and without fixed meal times, he went hungry. He wore thick glasses and mismatched clothes, and his face was a moonscape of healed acne. He made part of his living these days by casting busts of famous writers in plaster of Paris, but he had too much bad history to be kept on the straight. Other criminals blackmailed him into helping them, and Sturmey, already a weak man, could do little to resist. It wasn't surprising that, out of his 46 years, only 20 had been spent at liberty. Inside the workshop, we came across a large workbench on which were placed about 500 foot-high busts of Will Shakespeare, all of them in various states of completion. A large vat of plaster of Paris lay empty next to a rack containing 20 rubber casts. It seemed Sturmey had a big order on. Archer himself was at the back of the shop, indulging in his second profession, repairing Will's speak machines. He had his hand up the back of an Othello as we crept up behind him.
The mannequin's crude voice box crackled as Sturmey made some trifling adjustments.
It is the cause. It is the cause. Click. Yet I'll not shed a drop of her blood. Click. Nor scar that whiter skin of hers than snow.
Hello, Sturmey, said Bowden. Sturmey jumped and shorted out the Othello's controls.
The dummy opened its eyes wide and gave out a terrified cry of monumental alabaster before falling limp. Sturmey glared at Bowden. "Creeping around at night, Mr. Cable. Hardly like a litter of tech, is it?" Bowden smiled.
"Let's just say I'm rediscovering the joys of field work. This is my new partner, Thursday next."
Archer nodded at me suspiciously. Bowden continued.
"You heard about Jim Cromarty, Sturmey?"
"I heard," replied Archer with feigned sadness.
"I wondered if you had any information you might want to impart."
"Me?"
He pointed at the plaster busts of Will Shakespeare.
"Look at those. A fiver each wholesale to a Jap company that wants 10,000. The Japanese have built a 7/8 scale replica of Stratford-upon-Avon near Yokohama, and love all this crap. 50 grand, Cable. That's literature I can relate to."
"And the Chuzzlewit manuscript?" I asked. "How do you relate to that?"
He jumped visibly as I spoke.
"I don't," shrugged Sturmey in an unconvincing manner.
"Listen, Sturmey," said Bowden, who had picked up on Archer's nervousness. "I'd be really, really sorry to have to pull you in for questioning about that Cardenio scam."
Archer's lower lip trembled. His eyes darted between the two of us anxiously.
"I don't know anything, Mr. Cable," he whined. "Besides, you don't know what he would do."
"Who would do what, Sturmey?"
Then I heard it. A slight click behind us. I pushed Bowden in front of me. He tripped and collapsed on top of Sturmey, who gave a small cry that was drowned out by the loud concussion of a shotgun going off at close quarters. We were lucky. The blast hit the wall where we had been standing. I told Bowden to stay down and dash low behind the workbench, trying to put some distance between myself and our assailant. When I reached the other side of the room, I looked up and saw a man dressed in a black greatcoat holding a pump-action shotgun. He spotted me, and I ducked as a blast from the shotgun scattered plaster fragments of Shakespeare all over me. The concussion of the shot had started up a mannequin of Romeo, who intoned pleadingly, "He jests at scars that never felt a wound, but soft, what light through yonder?" Until a second shot from the shotgun silenced him. I looked across at Bowden, who shook the plaster out of his hair and drew his revolver. I ran across to the far wall, ducking as our assailant fired again, once more shattering Archer's carefully painted plaster statues. I heard Bowden's revolver crack twice. I stood up and fired at our attacker, who had secreted himself in an office. My shots did nothing except splinter the wood on the doorframe. Bowden fired again, and his shot ricocheted off a cast-iron spiral staircase and hit a will-speak machine of Lord and Lady Macbeth. They started whispering to one another about the wisdom of murdering the king. I caught a glimpse of the man running across the room to outflank us. I had a clear view of him when he stopped, but as he did so, Sturmey Archer stood up between us, blocking my shot. I couldn't believe it.
"Felix Seven," cried Archer desperately. "You must help me. Dr. Muller said..."
Archer, sadly, had mistaken Felix Seven's intentions, but had little time to regret them as our assailant dispatched him swiftly at close range, then turned to make his escape. Bowden and I must have opened fire at once. Felix Seven managed 3 paces before stumbling under the shots and falling heavily against some packing cases.
"Bowden!"
I yelled.
"You okay?"
He answered slightly unsteadily, but in the affirmative. I advanced slowly on the fallen figure, who was breathing in short gasps, all the time watching me with a disconcertingly calm face. I kicked away the shotgun, then ran a hand down his coat, while holding my gun a few inches from his head. I found an automatic in a shoulder holster, and a Walther PPK in an inside pocket. There was a 12-inch knife and a baby Derringer in his other pockets. Bowden arrived at my side.
"Archer?" I asked.
"Finished."
"He knew this clown. He called him Felix Seven. Mentioned something about a Dr. Muller, too."
Felix Seven smiled up at me as I took out his wallet. "James Cromarty," demanded Bowden. "Did you kill him?"
"I kill a lot of people," whispered Felix Seven. "I don't remember names."
You shot him 6 times in the face. The dying killer smiled.
That I remember.
6 times? Why? Felix Seven frowned and started to shiver.
6 was all I had, he answered simply.
Bowden pulled the trigger of his revolver 2 inches from Felix Seven's face. It was lucky for Bowden that the hammer fell harmlessly on the back of a spent cartridge. He threw the gun aside, picked up the dying man by the lapels, and shook him.
"Who are you?"
he demanded.
"I don't even know myself," said Felix Seven placidly. "I was married once, I think, and I had a blue car. There was an apple tree in the house where I grew up, and I think I had a brother named Tom. The memories are vague and indistinct. I fear nothing, because I value nothing. Archer is dead. My job is done. I have served my master. Nothing else is of any consequence."
He managed a wan smile.
"Hades was right."
"About what?"
"About you, Miss Next. You're a worthy adversary."
"Die easy," I told him. "Where is Hades?" He smiled for the last time and shook his head slowly. I had been trying to plug his wounds as he lay dying, but it was no good. His breathing became more laboured and finally stopped altogether.
"Shit!"
"That's Mr. Shit to you next," said a voice behind us. We turned to see my second least favourite person and 2 of his minders. He didn't look in a terribly good mood. I surreptitiously pushed Felix Seven's wallet under a workbench with my foot and stood up.
"Move to the side."
We did as we were told. One of Shit's men reached down and felt Felix Seven's pulse. He looked up at Shit and shook his head.
"Any ID?"
The minder started to search him.
"You've really screwed things up here next," said Shit with barely concealed fury. "The only lead I've got is Flatline. When I finish with you, you'll be lucky to get a job selling cones on the M4.
I put 2 and 2 together.
"You knew we were in here, didn't you?"
He glared at me.
"That man could have taken us to the ringleader, and he has something that we want," asserted Shit.
"Hades?"
"Hades is dead, Miss Next." "Horse shit, Shit. You know as well as I do that Hades is alive and well. What Hades has belongs to my uncle, and if I know my uncle, he would sooner destroy it forever than sell out to Goliath."
"Goliath don't buy, Next. They appropriate. If your uncle has developed a machine that can help in the defence of his country, then it is his duty to share it." "Is it worth the life of 2 officers?
"Most certainly. Spec Ops officers die pointlessly every day. If we can, we should try our best to make those deaths worthwhile."
"If Mycroft dies through your negligence, I swear to God..." Jack Shit was unimpressed.
"You really have no idea who you are talking to, do you, Next?"
"I'm talking to someone whose ambition has throttled his morality."
"Wrong. You're talking to Goliath, a company that has the welfare of England foremost in its heart. Everything that you see about you has been given to this country by the benevolence of Goliath. Is it little wonder that the corporations should expect a small amount of gratitude in return?"
"If Goliath is as selfless as you suggest, Mr. Shit, then they should expect nothing in return."
"Fine words, Miss Next, but cash is always the deciding factor in such matters of moral politics. Nothing ever gets done unless motivated by commerce or greed."
I could hear sirens approaching. Shit and his 2 minders made a quick exit, leaving us with Felix Seven and Archer's bodies. Bowden turned to me.
"I'm glad that he's dead, and I'm glad that I'm the one that pulled the trigger. I thought it might be hard, but I did not have the slightest hesitation."
He said it as though it were an interesting experience, nothing less, as though he had just been on the roller coaster at Alton Towers and was describing the experience to a friend.
"Does that sound wrong?" he added.
"No," I assured him.
"Not at all.
He would have killed until someone stopped him. Don't even think about it." I reached down and picked up Felix Seven's wallet. We examined the contents. It contained everything you might expect to find, such as banknotes, stamps, receipts, and credit cards. But they were all just plain.